Cecilia has joined us today to talk about the successes of their last 10 years and the plans for the next 10. Cecilia, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Lori, and hello, everyone. I think as you'll hear as I go through my comments today, that the idea for OpenCourseWare was inspired, at least in part, by the open source software movement itself. And we certainly share many of the same commitments you mentioned to openness and transparency and collaboration. So it's a real pleasure to be invited to share our story on opensource.com. And let me get right into it.
Cecilia.
What I thought I'd do for the next 30 minutes or so is share with you how MIT developed and implemented the idea,
a little bit
about what we know of the impact that it's having around the world and at MIT, and what we see as future opportunities and challenges for the project in the next decade, including some of the new initiatives that we're working on right now. Without further ado, let me just jump in and say the story, the idea for OpenCourseWare came from an MIT faculty committee. This wasn't a top-down kind of decision. It was a committee that was formed back in the year 2000. The charter for the committee was to look at how the internet was going to change education and what MIT should do about that. If you think back to that, to 2000, that was a period in time when many universities were actually considering launching for-profit ventures, and MIT was a little bit late in actually considering these questions. When the committee was first put together, there was an assumption pretty much around campus that the end result would be some sort of proposal to do a for-profit model like MIT.com or something like that. After about a year of work, and this was fairly diligent work, it involved outside consultants and a lot of study, the committee came up with a number of different ideas for the kind of online programs that MIT might offer. The consultants helped the committee look at what kind of financial models there might be. But the bottom line, after a lot of work by a lot of people, was a conclusion that because of the nature of MIT education, it was going to be pretty hard to try to move that kind of thing online. And you know, part of that is MIT as an engineering school is fairly small. We have a total student population here of about 10,000. Our students are very high performing. We have a very small faculty, and a key part of the kind of education that we provide here is interaction between students and faculty. Students get a lot of opportunities to work in laboratories and hands-on instructional experiences, and these are all very key to our program. So to take these and put these online, I think the committee decided, would be largely impossible, and it, even if some of it could be put online, it would be very expensive. So, you know, that unfortunately was the end result of a year of work, and it wasn't until the very final stages when they came to this conclusion that the committee said, you know, wait a minute, maybe we've missed something. You know, let's go back to basics. And what they did is they went back and they looked at the MIT mission statement, which part of which says to advance knowledge in ways that will best serve the nation and the world. And they thought about what MIT did best. Hello?
Hello, Cecilia. This is Jeff from WebEx. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hi, Cecilia. We can still hear you.
Okay, I was being told that people here couldn't hear. Okay, so you can hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, we can.
Okay, I'll keep going. Sorry about that interruption. The bottom line was that the committee looked at the MIT mission, and one of the decisions that they came to was that, you know, we have the internet. The internet can distribute content. MIT has content, why not just give away the material for free? And so the actual proposal that came back to the president was a one-page memo. It proposed what was a very simple but revolutionary idea, and that was to make the materials like the syllabus and lecture notes and assignments and exams available so that instructors and students at other universities could use them to improve their own teaching and learning. That idea, the president and the provost immediately saw the value of that and the consistency with the MIT mission. They had a lot of consultation with faculty across MIT, and it became clear that there was fairly widespread agreement to go forward with this. They then went and sought support from a couple of foundations to get the program off the ground because it was expected that this would be fairly costly, especially because the idea was not just to pick a few high-profile courses and put those up, but to try to basically show all of the courses across the MIT curriculum. And let me stop there and just say that, you know, one of the things we've talked about a lot is why did this idea start at MIT and not at some other institution? And I think a lot of people, the answer that a lot of people have come up with is that it is the culture here. It's an open culture. The idea of open sharing using the internet has very deep roots at MIT. You know, sharing of open source software, research paper preprints, and even the web itself were already pretty widely accepted ways of disseminating materials among faculty. And the open source software movement, it had very deep roots at MIT. The GNU Project, you know, Richard Stallman, the Free Software Foundation, these were all very strongly connected into MIT's artificial intelligence community, computer science community. And even MIT's Project Athena, which I was a part of back in the 1980s, we made a decision to release all of our software, a significant amount of network-type software, under open-source kinds of terms. So this kind of history at the Institute, I think, created a really strong base of faculty support for open sharing of our educational materials. And I think it was a major factor in the widespread acceptance of OCW among faculty and the administration. Our current president at MIT, Susan Hockfield, describes the vision of OCW this way. She says, OCW expresses MIT's goal of advancing education around the world through a global community in which knowledge and ideas are shared openly for the benefit of all. And I think 10 years later, there is general agreement at MIT that OCW has proven to be one of our most innovative and transformative educational endeavors. And by sharing their materials openly on the internet, the faculty have been able to really magnify many times their ability to contribute to global education. So let me just say OpenCourseWare was a revolutionary idea when it was proposed. I think it's now still something that people misunderstand, and it's somewhat difficult to explain. So it's often easier for us to focus on what it is not. First of all, it is not an MIT education. It is not something that represents everything that happens in our classroom. You can't get a certificate. You can't get a degree. It's not a formal distance education program. I think the point that people are most often confused about is this one. It's that OCW isn't a collection of courses that have been designed to be online. It's more, I think it's really more like a course catalog that has a lot of content added to it. You know, more like a virtual library is a way to think about it, of all the materials that are used in existing MIT classes. And we've made these available freely and openly, no registration, and it's an ongoing activity. So we continue, a large part of what the work of our staff is today, is continuing to update materials and publish new courses as they come along. It's kind of hard to communicate how big OCW is, and in fact, one of the frustrations we have with our website sometimes is you look, you come to the homepage of ocw.mit.edu, and it's like the tip of an iceberg. We have over 2,000 courses now available in our publication. That includes 2,000 syllabi, reading lists, but we also have lecture notes, nearly 18,000 lecture notes, almost 10,000 assignments. Exams, about half of the exams actually have answers, so you can check yourself. And beyond these core materials, we've also included over time more and more enhanced materials, such as video content. We actually have about 50 courses now that have their entire lectures recorded. We also have about 30, 35 complete textbooks. We have lots of animations and simulations. And the materials that we have online cover all 33 of MIT's academic departments, both undergraduate and graduate level. So it's an enormous and comprehensive kind of repository. All of these materials have been made available under what eventually, I guess in 2005, became the Creative Commons license. It didn't exist when we first started. This is an open license. It allows people to reuse, redistribute, and modify materials to meet their own needs. The only restrictions that we put on are that the use has to be non-commercial, that any reuse has to be attributed to MIT and the faculty member, and any derivatives that get made have to be made available under the same license. So we think of this as the equivalent, really, of an open source software license for content, although it's not completely free of restrictions. A real illustration we like to point to of the power of this open license is the number of translations that have occurred of our content since we started publishing. And by our count, there are now about 1,000 translations of courses that have been done in languages that include Spanish, Portuguese, Chinese, Thai, and Persian. There are translations underway in, I guess, Turkish as well. We have about 16 Turkish translations, and they're planning to do another 50 or 100. The organizations that translate these materials didn't have to ask permission from us or from the faculty member to do these translations and make them available because, of course, of the open license. What's also remarkable about these translations is that these organizations are doing this with their own resources and their own money. We have worked with some of them on quality assurance, but we don't provide any financial support to them. We estimate, based on what we know of what it takes to translate these kinds of materials, that these groups have invested about $10 million creating translations. And this has a profound impact on access to our content globally. The other side effect of this open license is that it's allowed us to distribute materials through other channels. Not just our website, but to increase the reach of OCW well beyond our website. Good examples of this is our iTunes University site, our YouTube site, which carries most of the audio and video content we have. We have over, I think, 1,800 total tracks available so far in those on those sites. Our physics lectures, which are in video, I think we have the first 2 years of physics in full video lecture, are regularly among the top downloads in the iTunes U site since Apple launched the service several years ago. We've also worked with other groups. There's a research group in Slovenia called videolectures.net that distributes our content through their portal. And to date, these kinds of remote distribution, if I take iTunes as an example, we've had nearly 25 million downloads from iTunes, almost 20 million views of our content on YouTube. So these provide us with great ways of getting our content out, and it's all been possible because of the open license. A key strategy for us in getting widespread faculty participation, and we've estimated that probably 80% of the MIT faculty have provided us with some course, their materials. But one of our strategies for getting that level of participation was to make it as easy as possible for these faculty members to provide their materials. This meant that we needed to invest in a central staff that would work with them, prepare the materials for the web, clear the copyright permissions, basically, you know, come up with the publishing strategy. And we currently have a staff of about 25, many of whom are directly involved in these kinds of publication activities. We would not have the site we have today if it weren't for those staff members. Now, at this point, you probably wonder, how do we pay for all of this? Much of our early funding came from Hewlett and Mellon foundations. We were also supported by Ab Initio Software Corporation. MIT, to date, has put in about $10 million of MIT budget money into the project. We think going forward, our operating budget will need to be, like this year, it's about $3.7 million. And this is supported through a mix of MIT's general budget, things like corporate gifts and underwriting, donations, large and small, from visitors. And we also get project grants that support both our core operation as well as innovative new things that we want to do. So that's basically how we support what is a fairly expensive operation, at least within a university. Now, from the beginning of OpenCourseWare, we really had a dual mission. Our goal, in addition to publishing MIT's educational materials, was also to extend the reach of and the impact of this concept, and really to inspire other people to participate, and other institutions in particular. In this respect, I think we never imagined how successful we were going to be at this. I think our faculty were stunned. Almost as soon as we launched our first 500 courses in 2003, we began to get inquiries from other schools who were interested in doing their own open coursewares. These were leading schools in the U.S. like Johns Hopkins and Notre Dame, top schools in Japan and China and Europe. And there are now more than 250 of these schools that have their own open courseware projects in the works. We think there are probably, it says on this slide, 13,000 courses. It may be closer to 15,000 at this point. MIT is only 2,000 of those, and so we're thrilled that on a daily basis we're losing market share, because that means the movement is really growing. So what difference has all of this made? Let me touch on some of what we know about how people have used OpenCourseWare. And this slide has a quick summary of a number of different things. I'm going to start with our traffic, which on the right hand, the green globe map there. If you look at that, what you'll see is about 60% of the visits to our site are coming from outside of North America. The bulk of that traffic internationally is coming out of East Asia, South Asia, and Europe. Middle East and Africa, that traffic is low, but it's been building over time. We get relatively low traffic from sub-Saharan Africa, which, you know, is largely connectivity issues in that region. Overall, on a monthly basis, depending on what time of the year it is, we're currently receiving between 1 million and 1.5 million visits directly to our website each month. That represents about 800,000 unique visitors. In addition, we estimate there's about 750,000 to maybe 1 million visits to the translations that I mentioned before. You can see from the pie chart there that about 15% of the visitors who are, actually about 10% of the visitors coming to our site are educators from other universities. About 42% are students that are coming from other universities. And the big surprise to us is that almost half of our traffic is coming from people who have no formal affiliation with the university at all. These tend to be working people, in some cases homeschooling parents, retired people, and many others who just want to learn for professional or personal reasons. And we call this group self-learners. This is a group that has surprised us the most in terms of its interest and its use of our material. The materials that we've developed, I said earlier, are not online courses. They're not designed to be online courses. These are really just the materials that are developed here at MIT. But people around the world, even studying on their own, are finding these to be extremely useful. Let me go back to sub-Saharan Africa issue. To address the connectivity issues there, one of the things we did is launched a program in 2005 to provide mirror copies of our site on hard drives to universities. And we have, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, many universities that we found have good fiber optic networks internally, but their connectivity to the wider internet is extremely minimal. So we put a drive on their campus that has all of our content, including our video, and in that way they can provide pretty much the same access speed to our content on their campus to people on their campus that developed areas have when they access our site directly. We got donations of those drives from Seagate, and we now have more than 250 of these sites around the world, and we're continuing to add to that on an ongoing basis. We use, and by the way, we use the internet to keep those sites synchronized with all of our most recent content. Here's a table that shows how people use the site by role. I think I don't want to go into too much detail on this. We get this data through annual surveys that we do online of our users. A couple interesting points here is that most people, even students and educators, the primary way they're using the site is for personal learning. Educators do use our materials to incorporate into their own teaching, but you know, many of them are coming to learn you know, new approaches to teaching or to refresh themselves on a topic before they teach. Students are using the site in conjunction with classes they're attending, and they're also planning their course of study. And you can see at the bottom, self-learners are using the site both in and outside of professional kinds of activities. Here's three examples of users that we've talked to over time, representing each of these different classes, and talking about how the site has helped them. At the top is Professor Harioka from Indonesia. He's the head of an architecture department there. He used the site to show his faculty how they might make their courses more interactive and less lecture-oriented. So it wasn't a matter of taking MIT materials and reusing them directly, but showing how MIT was teaching architecture. The second student who's represented there, Kun Lee, is was one of the few students at his university in Nigeria who had access to the internet from his home. He was struggling with a topic that he was learning, and he found OCW through a Google search. He liked the material so much he printed it all out, and he brought the entire set of handouts into class for use by his peers and the instructor. And then the final person is a person who's an operations manager for a bank in Bahrain. And he used the site to improve his management communication skills. So these are all fairly typical, but we find many, many use cases that aren't reflected here that we could talk about. These are just three. We've heard from many thousands of visitors telling us how OCW is making a difference in their lives, and some of these are really crazy and over the top. We keep a list of our favorite sound bites, and here are a few. For you to check out. You know, we're like the Big Bang of the knowledge universe. That was one that came in quite early. One of the ones that people like to point to is like falling in love. And those people really need something to do with their time, I guess. Let me just finish up talking about the impact by talking about benefits back here at MIT, because people say, why did MIT really do this? You know, are you going to start charging for access at some point? The truth is MIT really did this for the global benefit of it all. And we felt as though there might be some opportunity for benefits to MIT at some point, but we didn't really have a good idea about what those would be. As it turns out, I think the openness, the transparency of the MIT curriculum that is associated with OpenCourseWare has had tremendous benefits, not just for the world, but for MIT itself. We're still, sort of discovering the benefits associated with having that curriculum online. The key benefits we've identified to date are three. First, it has given MIT a lifelong connection with students and alumni. The surveys that we've done tell us that about half of our incoming freshmen have already used OCW. For significant numbers of them, the site was an influence on their decision to come to MIT. Once they're here, more than 90% of the students are using the site to supplement materials they're getting in their regular classes. And more than half of our alumni have used the site. So it's really become a powerful point of connection at all phases of the student life cycle here. Secondly, OCW has been a powerful tool for improving teaching and learning. And about a third of the faculty who've given us materials say that the process of publishing helped them improve their materials. About 80% of the faculty use the site mostly to develop course materials or for self-study. And the transparency of having the materials online allows them to have more visibility into what's being taught across MIT. They have found it possible to access their colleagues' materials for the first time. We have examples of professors who are in different departments who had been teaching similar subjects for 15 years and never knew. And suddenly, from OCW, they become aware of each other and they begin to collaborate. I'd say the final benefit, most obvious benefit, is OCW showcases MIT and the curriculum at MIT and the faculty in a way that was never possible before. And this has helped our faculty and our departments build professional standing, especially in fields MIT isn't as well known for. And it's led to a number of international engagements. It's been a tool used by faculty who are working in China, Africa, and elsewhere. And there's a general perception here at MIT now that OCW has become one of MIT's premier international engagements. And this is at a time when global connections and international presence are viewed here as critically important to the future of MIT. So in kind of wrapping up what we've done, I would say that we're pretty proud of what we've accomplished in the first 10 years. You know, we took what was a fairly revolutionary idea and made it a reality. We've published virtually the entire MIT curriculum under a free and open license. We've reached what we estimate is probably 100 million people with our materials. We've shown that openness can have significant benefits for students and educators and self-learners and for MIT as an institution. We've encouraged hundreds of other universities to share their materials and created a community of practice around OpenCourseWare. And I think it's safe to say that we've been an inspiration for a dizzying array of new and exciting educational experiments that support the basic principle of expanded opportunity through free and open educational resources. And let me just say a few words about this evolving ecosystem on the Internet. I mean, we're just a part of this now, although we've had a big hand, I think, in inspiring it. And just like open source software led to new and interesting models, new interesting alternative models for both developing and using software. I mean, this included new options for consumers, new business models for companies. I think open educational content is spurring lots of interesting experiments and discussions about alternative models in the education space. As I indicated before, hundreds of institutions participate in something called the OCW Consortium and are sharing their own materials. As more universities do this, more universities look at it as a viable option, and it's growing. And through this, I think we're changing basic assumptions in academia about content and how it's shared. In the commercial publishing world, we're also seeing changes. Flat World Knowledge is now making college textbooks available for free access under a CC license. They allow professors to build their own books, incorporate content into learning management systems, and all for free under, you know, thanks to the Creative Commons open license. Flat World has a model where they're making money by selling more convenient formats, like audio formats, print formats, and related study aids. But, you know, I think half of the use of Flat World is through their free open online textbooks. Another thing that's really important and getting a lot of press lately is the Khan Academy. Over the last 5 years, Sal Khan, who's an MIT grad, has been making low-tech video and related exercises available online for free under a CC license. He now has over 2,000 tutorials on a variety of subjects, mainly targeted in the middle school, high school audience. He's got assessment exercises tied into the videos. Everything's very, very modular. And to date, I think he's served 41 million visitors or so. His content's being used in pilots in a number of school systems where they're experimenting with the idea of turning the classroom, what he's called turning the classroom upside down or inside out. And in these cases, students actually watch Khan videos at home and work on problems during class when the teacher is available to help them. Carnegie Mellon has something called the Open Learning Initiative. This is a research approach to open education, open educational resources, and their fundamental goal is to develop learning environments that are really complete. You know, unlike MIT OpenCourseWare, where it's basically the materials, OLI provides courses that are complete, what they say, enactment of instruction. So they've integrated things like assessment, and you know, things like that sort. They provide, I think, about 20 courses online right now, and it's a great model. Open Study is a startup from Atlanta, which came out of Georgia Tech. They're providing worldwide study groups for many OCW courses at this point. Our Introduction to Computer Science has 12,000 registrants on an Open Study site. And through this kind of site, what we're trying to do is add some interactivity to our content and experiment with how network-based communities might support learning with this open content. Final example I'll point to is the Stanford one. I don't want to go into it too much. You know, maybe during question and answer we can talk a little bit about that. But within the last few weeks, there's been a lot of press around the Stanford computer science courses that are going to be opened up this fall to the public. One on artificial intelligence is at this point, the latest point, I think, has 120,000 people registered for it. This is a course that is being taught at Stanford for Stanford students, but it's being opened up to the public. It will include, for people who register, self-paced exercises, graded homework, feedback from the instructors, and a statement at the end of accomplishment, sort of a certificate or something. Not clear yet exactly how openly licensed all the material will be. We hope it will be. We're very, very interested in watching this, you know, primarily because as part of developing these online offerings, these free online offerings, the Stanford faculty are actually radically revamping how they're teaching their Stanford students. So the opening to the public is really giving them an opportunity to modularize things, and they, just very much like the Khan Academy model, are thinking that Stanford students will be expected to use materials video, largely video-based, prior to coming into class so that class time can be more interactive, more collaborative. So many of these new opportunities for self-learning you can read about in things like Anya Kamenetz's book, DIYU, which I've got a little image of there. If you haven't checked it out, you might want to. Another interesting book I'd recommend is Taylor Walsh's Unlocking the Gates, and that includes case studies of many of the groundbreaking open educational resource initiatives. So let me kind of wrap up. You know, we're proud of what we've accomplished, but it's clear that there are many, many opportunities to build on what we've done and what other developments are occurring in the ecosystem at this point. We've recognized through our work that human potential is really universal. The opportunity to develop that potential is not. The enormous number of people that are accessing our content or content at Khan Academy, Yale, at Stanford, at Rice Connections, at CMU, and other sites, it's a striking reflection of the global shortage of quality education. And this is a gap that we want to be part of helping to close in the next 10 years. Open content is not a replacement for classroom instruction. It's not a replacement for distance learning. But in cases where quality education is not available, we feel that OpenCourseWare combined with other related resources and services really provides a viable third option. And if in cases where formal education is available, we think OpenCourseWare materials can make those opportunities even better. So let me talk about what we see as future directions for OCW. As we strive to achieve this overall vision of closing the gap in opportunity. It's important to remember, first off, that the core mission at OCW has been, and we expect it to be in the future, publishing MIT's materials and making these available for free and open access. I expect most of our resources will continue to go into that as we publish new and updated materials, working with faculty and students here. This will be a primary focus of our activity. But we're also undertaking a series of new initiatives that we hope will multiply our impact. These initiatives, we've identified four key focus areas for innovation. Many of these will end up involving external collaboration. We're not going to do this all ourselves. The first area, we're going to build on our efforts to share content as widely as we can. And as I mentioned, iTunes U and YouTube and a range of other channels, we will continue to pursue this. This fulfills our mission. It generates the most benefit possible. There are new opportunities coming. Mobile platforms is a really good example of new ways to get our content out to the world. Wikipedia is a natural venue for us to to integrate some of our materials into, particularly some of our rich media offerings, some of our video, if you can imagine that combined with Wikipedia content. The second focus area for us is moving beyond just the publishing of content and really beginning to explore the idea of broader ecosystem of open learning. As I talked about, there are so many projects out there now. There's been an explosion, and we think there's an opportunity for us to work together to develop new opportunities for people who are currently shut out of education. Our first step into this in the last year has been a collaboration with Open Study to bring interactive study groups to the OCW site, and I talked about that. I think we have about 10 courses with dedicated study groups now, and a lot more that are part of larger study groups. So about 20,000 people who use our content that are registered on that site. And the level of collaboration in some of the courses is very impressive. The third focus area for us is new projects designed to address specific needs of target audiences. And, you know, OCW is a great general resource. I think we've done a great job of serving broad audiences, providing them with a window into MIT, into MIT academic programs. At the same time, we think we can magnify the impact of OCW by shaping the content to serve particular needs. The first attempt at this was something we introduced in 2007 called Highlights for High School, which was targeted at high school students and educators. More recently, with some outside, with a three-year outside grant, we've launched a major effort, which we've called OCW Scholar, to better support the audience of self-learners. And over time, we'll be developing 20 courses as part of our portfolio that are much more complete. They will have been purposefully structured into modules for those users who may not have access to teachers or to libraries or to textbooks or other resources. The first five of our Scholar courses were published last January, and we currently have seven more under production this year. The final focus area for us is educators. And, you know, we haven't really figured out yet what we can do to help educators. We recognize that despite our best efforts, many students who might benefit from OCW aren't going to come to our site directly. And educators can be an important multiplier for us. So, we haven't made much headway here, but this is something that we're interested in exploring. There's a lot more that we can do in this area that will have potentially the largest impact on our ability to reach a much wider audience with our content. Closing up, you know, let me just say that as we've thought about how to evolve OCW, there are a number of strategic questions that have come up for us, and let me just share a few of those with you before I stop talking. First, as I've said, our mission has been to publish virtually all of MIT's materials, not to provide online courses, distance learning, online learning environments. But user expectations are changing. Best practices in terms of online education are emerging. And we have to ask ourselves, should we adapt? And if so, how? And even if our core mission doesn't change, should we be evolving the formats, the delivery systems for our content? Should we make our content more modular, include integrated assessments, add significantly more video, adapt our content, you know, for mobile platforms? Or should we stick to our knitting, as somebody would say, and focus on just working with faculty to publish new and updated content and then find partners who can do all of the extra stuff to really create true online learning experiences? So that's a very substantial question that we're wrestling with. The second, which is equally important, I think, is how can we harness the enthusiasm and intelligence and the participation of our millions of users around the world? People have mentioned opportunities for crowdsourcing homework exercises, subtitling our videos, tagging video into modular chunks, et cetera, et cetera. The third is what can we do, and I talked about this before, to make OCW more useful for educators, and there's a range of possibilities there. And then finally, and this is really more close to home, I think OCW provides MIT with an opportunity to really rethink how MIT builds technology-enabled learning environments for students here at MIT. As we learn things from other initiatives, like the Open Learning Initiative at CMU and Stanford's efforts in an open classroom, it becomes clear to us that there are significant opportunities for MIT to change and adapt its own ways of teaching in combination with the open content that provided via OpenCourseWare. So we're hoping to tackle these and other questions later this year, and we're going to be initiating a major planning process with our faculty. So I'll end my formal presentation there and look forward to your questions and comments.
Thanks, Cecilia. This is very inspiring. We do have many questions for you, so I'll go ahead and get started right away. So the first question is, will MIT OpenCourseWare become more interactive? For example, what about a conference method of teaching and learning, possibly over the next 10 years?
So this really comes back to this strategic question of how far should we go beyond our core mission? Interaction is a there are a number of different ways of interacting. If I look at what Stanford is going to be doing this fall, the interaction that they're providing is basically a discussion board. Imagine a discussion board for 100,000 people, where the teaching staff will filter through the questions that are being asked and will pick out, the most common questions, and will address those. And that's a model that, that's probably scalable. It might be possible for us to do that for a limited number of courses. I mean, it would require us to engage faculty or graduate students in a way that we haven't. But I think, that's possible. Interactivity that goes much beyond that, really, it begins to be a problem because the faculty here don't have a lot of time. And the people on the OpenCourseWare staff, we're not necessarily discipline experts. We have many MIT graduates on our staff, but their job here is really to work with the faculty and publish the content. So for us to provide real interactivity that involves people would mean us having to hire additional people. And so we'd have to figure out where to get the resources for that. But we're very interested in trying to figure out how to do things that are scalable and that are consistent with our core mission.
Okay, great. Thank you. You mentioned one of your key target audiences for the future are high school students. What's the current participation level from high school?
I think we have, on a monthly basis, I mentioned that to the OCW site as a whole, we get probably 1 to 1.5 million visits. I think our high school site is more in the 50,000, 60,000 visit range per month. So it's not, it's not huge. We haven't really promoted that, and in fact, the resources we're in the process this year for the first time in several years of upgrading the content there. We got some money from a Dow. A chemical company grant, and we're working with the chemistry department here to increase chemistry materials for high school students and teachers. Once we have that up, we'll figure out ways to promote it. That should help us draw more traffic. So it's about 50 or 60,000 visits per month.
Okay. That's a nice number. Will MIT ever offer online classes for credit? Perhaps not free through OpenCourseWare?
I'm probably not the right person to answer this question. This is probably a question for the provost because it's a significant strategic question that MIT is looking at right now. I'll go out on a limb and say if we do offer online classes for credit for fee, it won't be through OpenCourseWare. We want OpenCourseWare to remain as a untarnished kind of open and free content type of initiative. MIT may offer a limited set of online offerings that use some of the OCW content, but that add on the other kinds of things you would expect in a course that you pay money to participate in. So things like, an actual instructor, actual office hours online, actual homework being graded and exams being graded and credit at the end. I think that's highly possible that MIT will do that. It probably will not be done under the OpenCourseWare brand.
Okay. What about commercial uses? If an organization or a company can compare and combine MIT OpenCourseWare with assessments, expertise, process review credentials?
Because of our non-commercial license, that would require that company coming and talking to us. We'd probably have to do a separate agreement on that. And we, you know, there are, we have done separate agreements with commercial companies. That requires the faculty members' support and agreement. But, you know, it's not something that could be done under our open license because, as I indicated before, although we have an open license, it's not a completely open license, and it does have this one key non-commercial term.
Are there any plans to include more multimedia content to enhance the current OpenCourseWare content?
This is something that, yeah, the answer is yes. In fact, one of the problems that we're having right now within our publication process is as a result of some grant money and some gift money, we have been able to capture a number of courses in video this year, and we're in the process right now of trying to get that video material through our publication process because we've got to have we've got to have an intellectual property review of the material. We've got to then do a little bit of editing on it, and then we've got to do production to digitize it and get it online. So we are doing much more multimedia than we were doing even 2 years ago, and I don't anticipate that that is going to change. I think the users of OpenCourseWare have made it clear that video in particular is extremely helpful for them. And our faculty are getting more and more comfortable with the idea of doing video. And there's new models evolving in terms of how video can be used to supplement learning. I think up until the last year or so, all we had to really look at was the model of the talking, you know, what people would call the talking head lecture. And there's only so far that goes. Certain courses, that's just not appropriate because they're not lecture-based courses. But I think with things like Khan Academy have been so powerful in really opening people's eyes to different ways that multimedia can be used. And in some of our, one of the things that we're doing in our OCW Scholar courses that I mentioned is adding in video tutorials that are very short. They end up being things that sort of substitute for what we here at MIT would call a recitation. You know, students go to a lecture, and then a couple times a week they'll go into a smaller session with a grad student maybe who's working problems at the board, and they get to ask questions. It's much more interactive. We're trying to replicate that in video, much as, you know, in sort of a similar way to Khan. We're not, you know, it doesn't mean we're using tablets and stuff. We may actually have somebody standing at a blackboard, but we're trying a lot of new approaches. So, yes, you can expect a lot more multimedia, I think, going forward, different kinds of multimedia.
Okay. Speaking of tablets, is there a vision for the mobile apps for browsing OpenCourseWare material?
No, I would say the answer to that is right now, no, that we're looking for a vision. We've talked with a couple of outside companies. There's a company that called Erinsoft that did a mobile version of a mobile app for the iPhone and for the Android operating system, specifically to show OpenCourseWare material. That's sort of in its kind of primitive early stages, I'd say, is where we are with mobile platforms. There was an announcement just last week that Google had made a grant to the MIT Media Lab, and there will be a new center starting up there called Mobile Learning or something like that. And a couple of the primary faculty who are involved in that are very closely associated with OpenCourseWare, and I think some of what they intend to do is to experiment with the use of OpenCourseWare on mobile platforms to create new kinds of educational packages. So I hope that that kind of thing, you know, we in OpenCourseWare very much want to go down that path. It'll probably be a path where we're collaborating either with internal groups or with external groups.
I imagine that'll probably also help you with your participation levels in sub-Saharan Africa.
Absolutely. In India and many other developing countries. We've heard in India there's enormous amount of interest in mobile access. So I do think it's something that if we could figure out what the right vision, as you said, the right vision is for that, and if we can get our content into the right formats, it could have a huge impact on access to our materials.
So another question, is there a recommended starting point for a new user, like learning paths, if any for specific topics such as computer science or biology?
Learning paths. Well, now that's a good one. Let me just say, let me promote our OCW Scholar courses. We have, right now we've got 5 OCW Scholar courses. 2 semesters of calculus, 2 semesters of physics, and 1 semester of chemistry. And what we've done with those courses is basically pulled together material from a number of different MIT courses over time. So they're much more complete, first of all. And we've structured them into learning sequences. So you can go into those scholar courses and you start, like let's say you want to learn physics, and you want to learn physics as a freshman at MIT might learn physics. You start on page 1, and you go through each of those modules, and each segment, each module includes materials that you need to do to prepare, materials you should, you know, lecture materials, materials that you should use after you've seen the lecture. And so it really helps someone who's on their own kind of work through the learning pathway for that particular subject. I'd say that those courses are the ones that are most provide most assistance in terms of pathways.
Great, thank you very much. That's about all the time we have for questions today. We had some great participation. For those of you, you know, who'd like to learn more about this, we will have the broadcast up next week and a summary as well. And Cecilia, thank you very much for joining us. This has been fantastic.
Well, thanks, Laurie. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, can you hear me?